Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, benefits of living in the USA, Kenya and homosexuality, Master P, stuck up by a lawyer. Just thought we'd talk about some things that make you say, what? I found these topics are interesting. So I have a friend who travels around the globe and has witnessed poverty that makes the ghettos in the United States look desirable. I've seen some such places on the internet, you know, where like living in the hood is not as bad as way some other people are living. It seems the poverty level is more comfortable than some places, you know, for people to come here, you know. Maybe that's why we have so many illegal crossing the border. Poverty in America is like hitting the jackpot compared to what they have experienced. If you live in Mexico instead of the United States, I said you would have experienced health-wise, be 20.2% less likely to be obese. In the United States, 36.2% adults are obese. As of 2016, in Mexico, the number is 28.9% of the people live 8.3 years less, right? If you live in Mexico. I'm just using that as one place because there seem to be a lot of people crossing at the border, right? The United States average life expectancy is 81 years. 78 years for men, 83 years for women as of 2022. It's 72 years, 69 years for men, and 67 years for women in Mexico, right? So it seems like you live longer based on living in the United States and Mexico. Economy, be 10.3% less likely to be unemployed, right? In the United States, 3.9% of adults are unemployed as of 2018. In Mexico, that number is 3.5% as of 2019. Doesn't seem to be too much of a big difference there, which makes me wonder about what's going to happen with this influx of not that they're the only people coming in, but we have large populations, groups of Latinos coming into the country. You have to, you know, wonder what's going to happen to that percent of United States citizens who are unemployed and that 3.9%. What's going to happen? Are these people going to clash for employment? You know what I'm saying? So anyway, pay 11.6% lower top rate tax, right? Top tax rate. The United States has a top rate of 39.6%. As of 2016, Mexico has a top tax rate of 35% as of 2016. So I guess if you're going to pay the almost, you know, the same amount of taxes, you might as well get the most benefits out of it. I guess I don't know how that's, you know, I don't know what the thinking is. But it must be something here that's better because it's driving many people to come here. Make 70.3% less money, right, here in Mexico, right? United States had a GDP per capita of $60,200 as of 2020. Mexico's GDP is $17,000 as of 2020. So that's not a lot of money being made in comparison. So it's more being made here, at least, right? Be 2.8 times more likely to live below the poverty line, right, than people in the United States, right? The United States has a 51.1% amount of people living below the poverty line as of 2010. In Mexico, however, that number is 41.9%. And there you have it right there. There you, I doubt those people know those numbers, but that must be what's attracting people, the 41.9% living below the poverty line. You know, even though I hear some people are coming because they say their lives are in danger. So I can see why, you know, people would come here. If you're not from here, you don't know what kind of troubles we might be experiencing here and who might be experiencing the troubles. But some people, I think, do. Anyway, life have a 10.3% more children. In the United States, there are approximately 12.3 babies per 100,000 people. Mexico is 13.6 babies per 100,000 people, right? Be 73.7% more likely to die during childbirth. So I didn't see where they're giving birth to these children at, but it speaks to the medical care or the absence of medical care or the quality of medical care maybe in that country. But anyway, United States approximately 19.0 women per 100,000 births died during labor as of 2017. In Mexico, 33.0 women due as of 2017, right? So you come here, you got, these are some of the advantages that you can get. Depends on where you come from, how you view advantages in this country, what's good about this country, but it seems like, you know, there were a lot of good things, things that help other people and encourage them to come here, right? Be 2.3 times more likely to die during infancy with our children, right? So United States, approximately 5.2 children per 1,000 their live births die, right? So before they reach the age of one, right? So that's with the kids and stuff like that, right? Whatever might be wrong with the child, PME, whatever, right? In Mexico, it's 11.9 children, so it's more than double, right? A little slightly more than double. And that may speak to the type, the quality of availability and quality of medical care and knowledge of childbirth and things like that, right? Basic needs, be 20.9% less likely to have internet access. I don't know if... depends on where you live at. You don't need internet at all. Depends on how you live in, right? But nowadays, it helps to have the internet. We even have school over the internet here. So that's a plus because approximately 91% of the population has internet access as of 2020. In Mexico, 72% do, right? Expenditures, right? Spend 14% less on education. The United States spends 5% of its total GDP on education as of 2014. Mexico spends 4.3% of total GDP on education as of 2018. What does that mean? Because that's not much of a difference. They're spending about the same amount of education. But the GDP is lower for Mexico, much, much, much lower for Mexico, as I just read, right? So educational opportunities, right, in the United States, right? Less in Mexico, right? Spend 67.9% less on health care. United States spends 16.8% of its total GDP on health care as of 2019, Mexico, that number is 5.4%, as I said, right, as I kind of led to about health care. They're not even spending a lot of money on health care in Mexico. So I take it that investment in health care and knowledge of health care and things like that is saving lives, right? So we've got to look in, you know, see what other good things were, you know, about, you know, United States. Because I guess I've been bashing them for a couple of years. Everything was the same, was kind of negative. And it's not that we shouldn't talk about the negative things, because that's how you grow. AroundUniverse.com, right, says 10 incredible benefits of living in the USA. Now, you see what I just read. I made a comparison between the United States and Mexico, right? And you see an influx of people coming in from the southern border, which we border Mexico, right? That's not to say that everybody coming through is of Mexican descent either. Right? I just use Mexico as a correlation, right? 10 benefits of living in the United States. They say health care, right? That's kind of consistent, right? Education. Okay, we invest percentage-wise, we invest near the same percentage, but we have more money in the United States to invest, so our education investment more than in Mexico. Economic strength, of course, our GDP is more. Career opportunities, we have more diverse industries here and more industries, period, right? Safety, they say U.S. is safe. We'll talk about that. They say freedom. I don't know. That's a tricky word right there, freedom, because nobody is completely free. Natural beauty. There's some beautiful places in the United States. And I'm assuming that Mexico has some very beautiful places also. More than likely, they're not where a lot of people are living at, right? Diversity. I don't know how diverse Mexico is, but the United States is very diverse. You can find somebody here just about from every cultural, ethnic, religious background. Opportunities to give back. Well, I hope that exists anywhere, because all that takes is the will to do so, unless you live up under retirement, right? Then fun. It seems like U.S. is equipped to be one big playground. Even though they have playgrounds all over the world, the United States is a place where you can have a lot of fun. Right? That's what they're saying here. Opportunity to give back. So if you have opportunity to earn money, become wealthy, you have an opportunity to give back to have a less lesser-served population, right? I said healthcare is a huge benefit in the U.S. The Affordable Health Care Act made it so that all Americans have access to health care. You will never have to worry about not being able to afford medical care or not being able to see a doctor when you need to, they say, because it's the Affordable Health Care Act, right? So I went to the CommonwealthFund.org, right? Press release, a new international study, U.S. health system ranks last among 11 countries. Many Americans struggle to afford care as income inequity widens. See, we have our own problems here in this country, right? But people are still coming, right? The promise of the Affordable Act, the Affordable Care Act, is right there in its title, affordable. Yet anti-poverty agencies across the country fear federal financial assistance available under the law, health insurance will remain unaffordable for significant numbers of low-income Americans. All right? For those with very low wages trying to raise kids after paying for housing, electricity, food, transportation, child care, you know, things you need to survive, right? People are paying another $50 or $100 a month. That's just out of reach, said Sarisha Main, staff attorney at the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, right? The Affordable Care Act, ACA, is designed to make insurance affordable for the Americans, right? To be able to get this, right, with low and moderate incomes, right, particularly since it requires all Americans to have health insurance, right, or face a financial penalty, right? And that's kind of we'll get to the financial penalty part. The law expands Medicaid eligibility that states that to the poorest Americans, right? In the states that have agreed to do so, right? So that's if your state agreed to do so, right? Those making up to 33% of the federal poverty line, but it also provides financial assistance for those making up to 400% of the poverty level to help them buy private insurance on the new state health exchanges, right? Sounds good, right? Still, the financial help isn't enough for some, they say. Even with the subsidies, some people simply won't be able to manage to pay the health insurance premiums consistently with all other costs facing them, right? The authors of the ACA anticipated this problem to address it. The law allows states to create a separate insurance program called the Basic Health Program for people who earn too much to qualify for Medicaid and too little to afford insurance on the state exchanges, even with federal aid. Under such a plan, the federal government gave the subsidies directly to the states instead of to individuals and families. The states are supposed to pool the money, then use the financial leverage to push insurers to offer less expensive coverage, financial leverage, right? The number of states, including New York and Washington, are eager to create such programs, right? But they had to wait until Obama administration issued the regulations that will govern them. So this is old stuff, right? They went on to say, low-income Americans who weren't eligible for Medicaid must rely on the financial help that is available to them on the health insurance exchanges. Determine how much that amount is a computational labyrinth. According to the ACA, a family of three whose annual income is at 133% of the federal poverty level, an annual income of $24,352 should have to pay more than 3% of their household income in annual premiums, or $731, right? In that case, the federal government would pay the insurance company the difference between $731 and the actual premium. The percentage of individual or family is expected to pay rise at higher income levels, up to 400% of the poverty, right? At that income level, paying up to 9.5% of the household income on health insurance is considered affordable. A family of three making $73,240 would receive a subsidy to cover premium amounts above $6,958. People making between 133% and 250% of the poverty level also can get help with their out-of-pocket medical expenses, such as co-payments for visits to the doctor, providing they purchase at least a silver plan on the exchange. The exchanges offer up to four different tiers of health insurance plans: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Bronze plans have the cheapest premiums, but leave policyholders with the highest co-payment and deductibles. All right? Premium plans have the highest premiums, but the lowest co-pays and deductibles. Under the silver plan, people making more than 250% of the poverty level can expect to contribute an average of 30% of their medical costs, with their insurance company paying the rest. But those with incomes below 250% of the poverty level can get federal assistance with their out-of-pocket expenses. At 130% of the poverty level, an individual or family could contribute as little as 6% to the cost of their medical bills, with the insurance company and the federal government picking up the rest. Those cost-saving breaks, however, are only available for those selecting silver plans, apparently to entice people away from bronze plans with their high deductibles and copays. And they went on to say, despite all this assistance, health insurance still may not be affordable to some. All right, they say, it isn't like there's a fixed definition of affordability. That's particularly true in the U.S., where the cost of living varies so strikingly. What's poor in Mississippi is different from what's what is poor in New York. That makes a lot of sense, right? Look at people working at fast food stores in New York might be making a, might say, wow, that's a lot of money for working in a fast food store. But, you know, the cost of living data on the Albuquerque area from the Economic Policy Institute, Kelsey Hellman, a former staff attorney with the New York Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, showed that a single mother of two making 200% of the poverty level would have virtually no money left for health care premiums or health care expenses after paying for housing, food, transportation, and other necessities. So what are these guys calculating? They say it's affordable, but it seems to be clearly not. You know, they said the mother might decide to go with the cheaper bronze plan, but then she would forego the cost-sharing help the federal government makes available for silver plan policyholders. As a result, she might pay as much as 40% of her medical expenses out of pocket instead of the 13% she would have to pay with the silver plan. The difference could amount to more than $3,000 a year, $3,000 a year. So this is your affordable health care plan. It's not me. It's Kelsey Hellman saying this, right? And I'm assuming she knows more about it than me because I don't know diddly squat about it. Anyway, okay, those who decide to forego insurance can act for hardship exemptions from the financial penalty. The financial penalty, but getting medical care is likely to become increasingly difficult for them because the federal government is cutting its payments to hospitals that provide charitable care for the poor. Now, if you're a voting person, you need to pay close attention to what I just said. Because the federal government is cutting its payments to hospitals that provide charitable care to the poor. What are you saying? That's a message right there, saying if you're poor, not gonna you don't have your back. They quote Joe Biden: "We don't have your back if you're poor, right? You're cutting payments, right?" So, affordable health care or available medical insurance is not enough if you can't afford it, right? It's not, it won't take a rocket science to figure that out. If you can't afford the premium, and you can't afford pay the for the silver plan premium or the deductible from the the bronze 40%. It makes me wonder, what are you even thinking about, people? See, this kind of thing that we talk about in the United States. But still, with all this here, we have an influx of people coming here, not just across the southern border. Influx of immigrants coming here for opportunity. But we still have our problems, right? There's also a penalty for being uninsured, thanks to the Obama administration, right? They thought it right to penalize you, right? The prior tax penalty for not having health insurance in 2018 was $694 for adults and $347.50 for children, or 2% of your yearly income, whichever amount is more. It all ends in 2022. There is no penalty in 2023 that I know of. Question is, why did the Obama administration feel it was justified in coercing people to enroll in a health care plan? Why did they feel, you're going to penalize them, right? Seems very un-American to me. Or is it? Because I think I heard that before. We're going to penalize you if you don't do what we tell you to do. That's becoming a constant theme in America. I'm going to advise listeners to look out for that theme, because that's un-American. That's not fair. you're going to punish me if I don't do what you say. That's what we call tyranny, right? No, medical insurance for people should not stress the people out. The insurance business or racket and the medical care business or racket are about that dollar. Nice try, but the high cost of medical services doesn't help the people, particularly poor people, and I guess the middle-class families. From healthagents.com, there is no federal penalty for not having health insurance since 2019. However, certain states and jurisdictions have enacted their own health insurance mandate. The federal tax penalty for not being enrolled in the health insurance was eliminated in 2019 because of changes made by who? The Trump administration. All right, Stevie, that's the point, Donald Trump. The Trump administration did something right, right? Then we have welfare, right? Temporary assistance for needy families, right? Now, I hear that the people coming over will receive some assistance. All right, so temporary assistance for needy families, TANF, they call it, provides grant funds to states and territories to provide families with financial assistance and related support services. State administered programs may include child care assistance, job preparation, and work assistance. Right, who's eligible for this, right? To be eligible, applicants must be a resident of the state. To be eligible, applicants must be a resident of the state in which they apply. A resident of the state in which they apply. A U.S. citizen, a legal alien, or a qualified alien. That's the trick word right there, right? All right? You must be unemployed or underemployed and have low or very low income. Have a child 18 years of age or younger, or be pregnant, or be 18 years of age or younger and the head of a household, right? Not everyone qualifies for TANF. Be prepared to show all income sources. Still, they are benefits if you qualify for them or can afford them that are not available in some other countries. It's sweet, but it's sweet compared to something worse. That's what it sounds, that's what it seems like to me. Because this should be better for your healthcare. They need to revamp that for American citizens. But that's ridiculous. If they were really working for you, you wouldn't allow them to pass that law without it being something that people could actually afford. Wouldn't stress people out. Anyway, which countries have the best doctors, right? The strong medical armed systems. United States, United Kingdom, Germany, and France. All right? No reason to be here. You have a baby, pregnant. You're in a place where they have strong medical systems, right? If you can get to them, you're in the best hands. There's no guarantees in life, especially in the medical system, right? Because they are practicing medicine, right? The United States has some of the best hospitals in the world, and its medical research is cutting edge, cutting sharp, right? The country also has a large number of highly skilled doctors. However, the cost of health care in the U.S. can be prohibitively expensive, right? See? Which is a significant downside. You don't have the money, you can't get the service. All right? Unless somebody's going to just give you the service, right? United Kingdom, highly trained doctors. They have the National Health Service. Is a point of pride for many British citizens. However, right, NHS is facing significant financial challenges, and waiting times for medical treatment can be very long. Right, Germany is another country with high quality hospitals and doctors. The German healthcare system is very efficient, and costs are relatively affordable. However, some patients may find the bureaucratic nature of the system frustrating. Finally, France has a well-deserved reputation on high-quality health care. French hospitals are clean, well-organized, and staff are generally very professional and competent. French healthcare system faces financial challenges, right? and waiting on times for treatment can be lengthy. So, which country has the best doctors? Hard to say, definitely. However, the countries listed above are generally considered to have some of the best medical systems in the world. And I could imagine that people are migrating to France, England, and stuff like that, because I hear about people migrating there. The universal health coverage means, this is from the WHO, World Health Organization. Universal health care means that all people have access to health care services they need when and where they need them without financial hardship. It includes the full range of essential health services from health promotion to prevention, treatment, rehabilitation, and palliative care. A universal health care does not mean free access to every possible health service for everyone. Now, that sounds like double talk to me. You know how I feel about double talk. Double goes with devil. Double talk. Anyway, because you turn around and say you have access to the health services they need when and where they need them, then you turn around and say, does not mean free access to every possible health care service for everyone. Well, then you don't have access, because if you don't have the money, access does not mean there's a ham in the window, but all I can do is look at it. That's not access, right? Every country has a different path to achieving on universal health care and deciding what to cover based on the needs of the people and the resources at hand. It does, however, emphasize the importance of access to health services and information as a basic human right. And if it's a basic human right, then they should have access to every possible health service needed, free, or whether they pay a small amount or whatever. But if you don't have the money, what are they saying? Anyway, people need access to every necessary and available health care service. Right? The UHC does not mean free access to every possible health care service for every person. Every country has a different path to treatment. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Don't say that. It seems like the U.S. ranks high in medical service and high in cost in medical services. Yet, healthcare is a plus if you have money, right? As you see, seems to me like you need money. I don't care what they put in place. You got to be able to pay for it. Or you got to be dead broke, you know, on welfare, right? If the money is not universal, the healthcare is most likely not universal or going to be universal, right? Available, universally available. I could be wrong. Somebody could be thinking about some of the same stuff I'm thinking about. We'd be making changes as we speak. Changes could have been made. The report, Mirror Mirror, 2021, reflecting poorly healthcare in the United States compared to other high-income countries, shows that getting good essential health care in the U.S. depends on income, right? More so than any other wealthy country. Spending the most on health care, right? Despite spending the most of health on health care, we spend a lot of money on health care. So what's that mean? Is that like an inflated health care prices? What's going on? So I really need an economist to even help me get through some of this stuff. Because I don't know. I smell a rat. Half, 50% of the lower income U.S. adults reported that costs prevented them from getting needed health care, compared to a quarter, 27% of higher income adults. So it has impacted negatively on higher income adults and lower income adults, right? So I guess we get U.S. gets C for trying, but need to try hard, need to work this thing out. In the United Kingdom, only 12% of the people with lower incomes and 7% with higher incomes reported financial barriers to care. See how low that is? We have 50% here, right? 20% of the higher income, they only had 7% of the higher income people, right? So they need to look at what the United Kingdom is doing and incorporate it. Remarkably, high-income person in the U.S. was more likely to report financial barriers than low-income person in nearly all the other countries surveyed. Australia, Canada, France, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, and the U.K. That's the United Kingdom, right? So, go figure. Another thing that you can get here in a good old U.S. of A is an education, a quality education, right? Education is also top-notch in the U.S. of A, right? There are plenty of opportunities to get an excellent education, whether you want to go to a public school or a private university, right? That's college. I'm assuming the public college or college, right? You will be able to find the right school for you and your career goals. But before you get to college, you got to finish. You got to get to elementary school, middle school, and high school, right? So this is true for college and university, but public school located in underserved communities are suffering. If you have money, that will not be a problem. And if you have money, you are not sending your kid to public school, right? And we're not going to even get into that, right? We just keep it moving. U.S. educational rankings are falling behind the rest of the world, believe it or not. I'm not surprised. How it hurts the economy in you, right? Okay, we live in a capitalist society. Anything that hurts the economy will hurt, impact you, right? Because guys are going to want to make their money. These pimps are going to want to make their money. They ain't not going to care about if you eating or not. Only thing they're going to care about is making their money. Oh, did I say pimps? I meant to say pimps. Anyway, the United States is not investing as much in human capital as developed countries are. That means developed countries are soon to surpass the United States because they're not investing in human beings, education, and things like that to compete in, on the world stage. So what happens is, I guess that's all these rich kids that go to school and learn and inherit and, you know, do whatever they do, go into politics, whatever business, are going to be the ones that's running everything. Nobody's going to come from the dirt and rise up and be a part of this system, right? They said its comparative advantage is falling behind. So we had an advantage being educated. I spoke about education the other week, how important that is. Not just to have an education, to use it. It's no good if you have like I say, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. If you have knowledge, it's not to use it. It's almost like not having it at all. So here we have people who are not being invested into and the not having the knowledge and therefore not going to be able to compete on the world stage. I guess we're running into some of this stuff now. You know? So, the competition is going to get a little tight. If you don't practice, you can't, you know, you impair your ability to win, right? For example, U.S. Students' math skills have remained stagnant for decades, right? So what you going to do in the space program? Just rely on computers. This means the country is failing behind many others, such as Japan, Poland, Ireland, which have greatly improved. In fact, U.S. test scores are now below the global average. So if I'm getting a scientist, where do you think I'm going to get a scientist from? Or a mathematician? What country do you think I'm getting from? More than likely, the one with the highest scores. right? The highest scores are, that's your personal credentials. Economic growth or economic stability is aided. The United States in weathering the global depression, right? And financial crisis. The U.S. dollar is the world's primary reserve currency. I don't know why that is. That's something that hooked up after, I think, World War One or something. A sign of stability and confidence, according to the OECD poll of all member nations. American households have the highest average income globally. There's a reason to immigrate to the United States. American households have the highest average income globally, right? But it also costs more to live here, right? United States is surprisingly, and it's a surprisingly inexpensive country. The Global Food Security Index. The United States was in a Global Food Security Index. The United States was rated number one for food affordability and security. Okay. They're saying you can get something to eat here. The price is going up right now as we speak. Somebody's probably marking something up right now. From investingnews.com. What is the U.S. dollar backed by? I don't know if y'all know the dollar used to be backed by gold, right? From the 1970s to today, most countries have run on a system of fiat money, which is government-issued money that is not backed by a commodity, such as gold, silver, or platinum, or whatever, right? The U.S. dollar is fiat money, which means it is backed by the government, but not by any physical asset, gold, silver, platinum, right? When was gold standard introduced? It was first introduced in 1871 in Germany by... 1900s, most developed nations, including the U.S., were using it, right? So the system remained popular for decades with governments worldwide working together to make it successful. But when World War One broke out, it became difficult to maintain. What do you mean? What does that mean? That's probably a show. It's going to take me a long time to even figure that out, because I'm going to have to find out what questions to ask to figure out gold backing. And what's the relationship between gold and World War One, right? Changing political alliances, higher debt, and other factors led to widespread lack of confidence in the gold standard. What in the world does that mean? Gold is a metal. You dig it out of the earth. That's what I call double talk right there. And I'm running out of time with this subject. When was the gold standard replaced? It was replaced. The demise of the gold standard began in World War II, was coming to an end. So, right? At this time, leading Western powers met to develop the Bretton Woods Agreement, which ultimately became the framework for the global currency markets until 1971. The value of money is set by supply and demand for paper money, as well as supply and demand for other goods and services, right? So the money is not backed by gold, but by the government. But it is all good, isn't it? If everybody's in agreement. Everybody who's powerful is in agreement with this. So it seems to change the game. As of 2020, none of the world's countries use the gold standard. Right? And it didn't start in 2020. I'm saying this is 2020. Nobody uses the gold standard. So where's all the gold? Do they eat gold? I mean, did it disappear? What happened to it? Did it sink to the bottom of the ocean? Why did they do away with the gold standard? That was not a good explanation of that. And I know I'm going away, but, you know, career opportunities in the United States. There are lots of career opportunities here. And I'm going to say touche for that. Many immigrants legally and illegally come to the United States for economic opportunity. Some are very successful, right? Safety, they say. U.S. is a very safe country to live in. There is low crime rate, and you will never have to worry about your safety. That's a thumbs down. Now, sundown towns are communities in which black people were not. This is from www.charlotteobserver.com. Sundown towns are communities in which black people were not welcome. These towns openly discriminated against black residents and visitors, and violence was a common tactic. The name comes from signs that used to be posted telling minorities to be gone before the sunset for the day. There are 360 sundown towns and counties listed in the USA. This is some recent stuff we're talking about. Like, what part of the US are these guys talking about being safe? Because we got sundown towns. We got Philadelphia has over 500 homicides, I think I heard. Chicago has at least 630. And the U.S., 43,352 gun violent deaths. All this during peacetime. Not quite my idea of safe. So I would never tell anybody it's safe coming to the United States unless you came from a war zone. And I would say it's still not safe here because, yeah, guys came from Vietnam, came back home, and got killed right here in the United States. Freedom. In the U.S., you will have freedom to do what you want and to be who you want to be. You can pursue your dreams and goals without worrying about oppression or discrimination. That's arguable, right? We know that's arguable, right? We ain't gonna get into that because that's a whole show too. They said the 10 freest countries and territories in the world in 2021 Human Freedom Index is Denmark, Estonia, Ireland, Finland, Canada, Australia, Sweden, Luxembourg, right? Funny how the United States didn't make the top 10. You would think that one of the most powerful and advanced countries of the world on the planet would be ranked in the top 10 freest countries. After all, freedom and capitalism are common themes in the U.S. history. The U.S. is ranked number 15 after the United Kingdom. Natural beauty, they say. Okay, I'm sure people are not crossing the border to look at trees and blue skies wherever they find them, right? And anybody ever seen Atlantic City, I wonder why people even get in that water. Because I wouldn't put my foot in that. I wouldn't be worried about a shark. I'm going to be worried about waste. And I'm just going to leave that right there. Diversity, of course, we got some of everybody here, right? Yes, the U.S. is diverse. There is our descendants of immigrants who came in search of freedom and opportunity, the descendants of the indigenous people who lost most of what they had, illegal immigrants in search of opportunity, and the descendants of slaves who came against their will. Yes, we are all one big happy family. Just don't go where they don't want you to go. Opportunity to get back. Of course, you can get back anywhere you want. So, and it's solely up to you anywhere on the planet. Fun. Well, last but not least, the U.S. is a fun place to live. There's so many things to see and do. You will never get bored. There is something for everyone in this country, from the big cities to the small towns. This is where the U.S. excels in having fun. I'm in agreement with that. So I'm going to Kenya and homosexuality because I thought it was an interesting conversation here. Okay, I was a little long-winded on that first one. But I can see why people come here, but don't think that it's sweet. I guess that's what I'm trying to get you to say. It's not, it may be better than where you come from, but once you get here and you learn, you will see things are not working out as they say. Not as sweet as you think that it is. So it said, I don't know if people know that Kenya has made homosexuality illegal, right? From www.hrw.org news, Kenya court upholds archaic anti-homosexual laws. Archaic. Okay, now I think this is from people of author is a support of homosexuality and legalizing it. So I use the article because it has some good points.
far as, you know, legalizing it, you know, because I don't know what the points are of that they had them, right? So there's a lot. You got to probably check it out yourself for the week, because I'm not going to have time to really go through all of it, right? But the Kenya High Court upheld laws criminalizing homosexual acts between consenting adults, a step backward in the process and progress Kenya has made toward equality in recent years, Human Rights Watch said yesterday. So they call outlawing homosexuality a step backwards, right? The court was addressing the petition filed by three Kenyan organizations that worked to protect the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. The criminalization of same-sex conduct under Articles 162 and 165 of the Penal Code violates the rights of equality, non-discrimination, human dignity, security, privacy, and health, all protected under Kenya's constitution. Kenya's high court has relegated people in same-sex relationships to in Kenya to second-class citizenship, they say, right? Based on absurd claim that the penal code is not discriminatory, said Neela Gashep, senior LGBTQ rights researcher at the Human Rights Watch. Rights cannot be trampled upon in the name of social disapproval. The Court of Appeals should revisit this ruling urgently, she said, right? Kenya's anti-homosexual laws are a colonial relic, first imposed by the British colonizers in 1897. The Article 162 punishes carnal knowledge against the order of nature, right? Nature is the order of nature. Is I'm going to assume that is nature tells us that the man is supposed to have sex with the woman because the man has a penis. Woman has a vagina, man enters the vagina, ejaculates, 9 months later, it's a baby. Not exactly like that, but you know what I'm talking about. So that can't happen with two men, two women, right? So that I'm thinking against the order of nature. That's what the order of nature would be, that the man is made to have sex with a woman, right? Just like a screwdriver, a flathead screwdriver is made to go into a screw with a straight line across of it, not a Phillips screwdriver. Won't go in there. Not made for that, right? Can't do it. Same thing, right? Can't, you know, you're not going to have the same result, right? Indecent practices between males, liable up to 5 years in prison. The laws are rarely enforced. Human Rights Watch is aware of two prosecutions against four people under Article 162, right? So, the court rejected petitioner's case that the laws violate constitutional protections, stating that the provisions are not discriminatory because they do not single out LGBT people, and that the petitioners had not proved their rights had been violated under the law. The court also argued that the constitutional rights to privacy and dignity are not absolute and should not be read in the context of Article 45 of the Constitution, which states, and should be read in the context of Article 45 of the Constitution, which states that every adult has the right to marry a person of the opposite sex. So they're saying that their Constitution specifically states that every adult has the right to marry a person of the opposite sex. It doesn't say, the Constitution does not say you have a right to marry someone of the same sex. So that kind of defeats any petition for same-sex marriage. If the Constitution actually says that, I don't know. I've never seen it. Not from Kenya. The non-government organizations board and the government agency had refused to register the NGLHRC, claiming that it was promoting immorality, right? So basically, having this, I guess, it's a this is within Kenya, which, you know, they got to work their thing out. We have nothing to do with that, right? The court found that the NGO board was permissibly discriminating on the basis of the presumed sexual orientation and gender identity of NGLHRC's personnel in violation of constitutional protections around non-discrimination. The Court of Appeal upheld the ruling in March 2019, although the NGO board has appealed to the Supreme Court. Okay, they sound like they have similar laws as the, here at the United States, except for they're very specific on who can get married. In their constitution, adult, I don't know what adult age is over there, have a right to marry a person of the opposite sex. So, I mean, as long as that's the way they feel about that, that's it. That's the law. So, they had an incident where two people were arrested and they subjected them to forced anal examinations, right? The Court of Appeal ruled in 2018 that carrying out such examinations on people charged with consensual homosexual conduct violated the prohibition of torture and cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. I'm in agreement with that. Like, what could anyone hope to get out of looking up the anus of a suspected homosexual or a homosexual? What are you looking for? Are they looking for biological evidence, like you're doing a rape, you know, like a rape kit? You're looking, that is going too far, being anally searched for or searching up someone's anus. What if he isn't homosexual? What a violation. That's just even worse. What if that person's not homosexual? You forcing them to, Kenya, foul. You foul. That's a foul right there, man. That's not right. Why would you want to do that? On transgender issues too, Kenya court had moved the needle forward. In 2014, the High Court ruled in favor of transgender activists and her right to have her school certificate reissued with her female name and with no gender marker. Woo! They said the truth will set you free, and I don't know. Kenya's failure to move forward on decriminalization of same-sex relations violates its obligations under the international law. Human Rights Watch said in its 1994 decision on Toon versus Australia, the UN Human Rights Committee, the body that interprets the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which Kenya is a state party. So Kenya is a part of this other gang, this big gang, right? The UN Human Rights Committee, right? Which is under the Human Rights Committee, right? And they have some other laws, right? So that means you have other people making laws for Kenya. It's Kenya's a sovereign nation. They can't be a part of a larger entity that dictates them. You can't be a sovereign nation and do that. All right? So, you know, you in bed with somebody you are have differences on with. Kenya, why are you there? Anyway, the Kenya ruling is particularly disappointing in light of progress elsewhere in Africa around the world. Human Rights Watch said Angola issued a reverse penal code that no longer punishes so-called vices against nature. But the thing is, they once called it a vice against nature. What's that mean, against nature? Against the natural flow of how organisms are supposed to relate to each other, right? Man and woman is natural. Man and man is not natural. Woman and woman is not natural. So that's what they're saying when they say against nature. All right. But 33 countries in Africa still have laws on the book that outlaw consensual same-sex relationships, right? Chad criminalized same-sex relations for the first time in 2017. India discriminated same-sex relationships through a landmark court ruling in 2018, right? Kenya's government has adopted an ambivalent stance on LGBT rights. President Uhuru Kenyatta referred to homosexuality as not acceptable in a 2018 media interview, but has previously said he would not tolerate anti-LGBT witch hunts and other forms of violence, right? He's saying so. He's being reasonable. He's not compromising his belief or the belief of the Kenyan people, but he also does not believe in harming people just because you don't like what they do and what they are. Because, you know, there's a lot of things people do that you may not like and that may be perceived as being wrong according to your holy book or how you live or nature. But do you have the right to kill that person if they just doing that to themselves? Kenya accepted a petition at a UN Human Rights Council in 2015 to adopt legislation prohibiting discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation and gender identity, consistent with constitutional guarantees of non-discrimination, but no such legislation has been passed. Activists said they would appeal the May 24th high ruling on ruling, right? So, you know. Now, Jerry Gachuru, director of the National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, said, I believe justice will eventually prevail in Kenya, as in other parts of the world that have just decriminalized same-sex conduct. But in the meantime, ordinary LGBTQ Kenyans will continue to pay the price for the state's indifference to inequality. So I don't know what kind of inequality that might be talking about. So Kenya's population, Kenya, I think most of the people in Kenya are Christians. Forget how much percent of the population. It might be like 40%. Anyway, so I went to the Bible to see, you know, why. Because I saw where they said that since the event of Jesus Christ of Christians, that was no longer applicable, right? Somewhere somebody wrote that, right? So I went to the prohibition in Leviticus and said, they said the prohibitions in Leviticus don't apply to Christians. Yeah, it's right here. From the reformationproject.org said that, right? Leviticus condemns male same-sex intercourse. Leviticus 18:22 and 20:13. But the entire Old Testament law code has never applied to Christians in light of Christ's death. I haven't the slightest idea what that means. Because, moreover, the prohibitions of male same-sex relations reflect culturally bound concerns about patriarchal gender roles, which the New Testament points us beyond. I have no idea what that means. Leviticus 18:22, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with a woman. It is an abomination. That says God hate that. The Creator hate that. So if Leviticus 18:22 is telling you that the Creator hate that, Christ dying on the cross don't change that. Leviticus 20:13, if a man also lie with mankind, he lies with as he lies with a woman. Both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. Now, maybe the part about putting them to death, I don't know. But they say if that's wrong to the Creator and everybody that's doing some wrong stuff, and at the end, as you can see in Revelation, this is repeated. So it sounds to me like in terms of the Bible, definitely the Torah is forbidden is even hated by God. God hates homosexuality, right? It is very clear that the Torah prohibits homosexuality. Yes, it says, ye shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall ye diminish or art from it. Diminishing means the prohibitions in Leviticus don't apply to Christians. That's diminishing from the commandments, right? That ye may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. Deuteronomy 4:2. If any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part out of the book of life and out of the holy city and from the things which are written in this book. Revelation 22:18-19. Right? So this is from the if you're looking at the Bible, this is from the root to the tooth, right? From the nose to the tail, right? The Bible. Archaic definition from the Collins English dictionary means extremely old or extremely old fashioned, right? So this homosexuality is not a fashion, number one, right? So you can't even the very archaic depth of laws does not mean that it's not you should do away with it. Archaic shoes, you might, because they're so old, they worn and the leather's crinkled up and curled up and just don't look right. It's old. I understand that. But you can't judge a law behavior by how archaic it is. If that's the case, homosexual can be viewed as archaic and you need to change it. If you could say that you shouldn't have it because it's archaic. It's been around for a long time. Sodom and Gomorrah is not the first time I'm sure homosexuality. It's just the first time, one of the main places we see it in the Bible. But you see it in Genesis, right? They talk about a man not sleeping with a man, so it must have been around long before homosexuality. I mean, long before Sodom and Gomorrah. Anyway, fashion is the most general term that applies to any way of dressing, behaving, writing, or performing that is favorite at any one time or place, the current fashion style, right? Distinct fashion adopted by people of taste, right? The law and the commandments is archaic. Is thou shalt not kill. Is it archaic to be prohibited to murder someone? Is it? Because that's right there with you shouldn't lay with a man, right? And no homosexuality. If that's archaic, is it archaic to murder? Because you can't have it both ways. Based on the perception of the commandments being archaic, none of the commandments would be relevant or applicable today. That would include murdering a person, whether he or she was straight or gay. If Leviticus 18:22 and Leviticus 20:13 are archaic, so are the other commandments. They go 10 of them. There's much more than this. You should have no other gods before me. You should have many gods. Yep, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord God in vain. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Honor thy father and mother. You don't got to honor them. It's archaic. Thou shalt not kill. Well, that's archaic. I'm not doing it. As soon as after this show, I'm going to blow a couple people's heads off. I don't have to. It's archaic. I don't have to do it. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Oh, my man's got a nice looking wife. I'm going to get with her. After I blow those brains out, I'm going over there, get with my man's wife. It's archaic, right? Thou shalt not steal. Oh, all those guys during the riots, you guys weren't breaking the law. That's an archaic law. You can't say it's archaic. That cannot be a reason. You understand? Thou shalt not bear false witness. I'm going, all these Karens that get these black guys in trouble by lying on them. They aren't breaking any laws, right? Shall not covet. I see something's not mine, I want it. Ain't nothing wrong with that. That's archaic. Don't tell me that. These are 10 archaic laws, right? Commandments by God. There are more commandments from Genesis to through Deuteronomy, there are a total of 613 commandments. I can understand disregarding an old pair of shoes, a superstition not supported by science, reality, logic, fact. But the scriptures say homosexuality is an abomination, which means the creator hates it. Is it archaic? You can use science, reality, logic, and fact to back up who a man is supposed to have sex with. I get that. But it said thou shalt not kill. So with that, you don't have to be walking around killing these people, these homosexuals, even though I've seen somewhere in there where they're talking about stoning people for certain things in scripture. So how are we going with this? Where are we going? Are we going with fundamentally going by the commandments? Because it'd be hard for a lot of us to keep them, right? It doesn't mean that you don't have to keep the commandments. I think that whole thing about Jesus died on the cross and these commandments means you can't do it. So here, I'm going to sacrifice him for you. And therefore, I think that's the way I heard the story. So it doesn't mean that you should do it. It means I'm going to do this for you so that you can come to me. That means you're supposed to repent, means to cease from doing. So cease from doing it. Do your best you can not to do the wrong thing. That's what I get from all that. I'm not a preacher, though. Joshua's crucifixion did not relieve man of his moral, ethical responsibility, i.e. the commandment or perception of homosexuality, murder, stealing, lying, covetousness, you know, all that stuff that I just talked about. That is why the Kenyans made homosexuality legal. That's what I'm thinking. A marriage or union is between a man and a woman as described in Genesis. This is the religious belief and the beliefs of most Kenyans. Right? The majority of the country identifies as Christian. Oh, excuse me, it's 82% of the population. More specifically, 47% identify as Protestant, 23% identify as Catholic, 11% identify as some other branch of Christianity. So there's a lot of people reading the Bible, and it's from the, like I say, from the beginning to the end of it, it speaks against homosexuality. So do you really expect people who call themselves Christian to go against their belief when they make a law? That's the question. There was also Genesis. The Creator made Eve, not Steve, for Adam. The Lord said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. Now the Lord formed the man out of dust of the ground, the animals emerged from under the sky, right? I'm just going to keep moving, right? You know the story, right? So the man gave names on everybody, all the things on the planet, right? And he took out of the rib of the man and made the woman, right? And brought her to the man. The Creator made the one man, right? Right? And brought her to the man. She was made for the man. How do we know that? Because you can mate with her. You can produce children with her. She can bear the children. So she's made to receive you, right? In more than one way. The man said, this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. That is why man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. Adam and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. So, not trying to go to church on y'all, you know what I'm saying, but I get where the Kenyans is coming from, it being an 82% Christian country. You know, they're not forsaking their beliefs and their creator when they make laws, right? Especially, particularly this law. You know, so one might ask, is it a law against fornication in Kenya? Because that's against the creator will too, right? Anyway, it is best to keep the creator out of this argument because homosexuality is not sanctioned or encouraged by the creator in the Torah Old Testament, New Testament, or Quran. The moral of the story is that the woman was made for the man and that the man should leave his parents and join himself with his wife or woman. That is the only way they can be fruitful and multiply naturally. Right? That's how they get those things about nature, what they talk about, right? Why are people from the U.S. trying to advocate, coerce, or force Kenya to accept homosexuality? Why are homosexuals trying to force people to accept what they know and believe is unacceptable to them and the Creator? That's Obama never represented, stood up for, spoke out specifically for black people in the United States. But he has a voice for the LGBTQ world community. Now that is something to keep as a mental note. I should have made that note during his first term. This man is going around the world speaking up for the LGBTQ, specifically for them. When did he speak up specifically for black folks in the United States, which he existed shoulder to shoulder with in Chicago? When did he do that? I get beat over the head with this Obama scenario by my other friend. But he don't got to beat me in the head with that. Right? The U.S. president has launched an unprecedented defense of gay rights in Africa. This is from TheGuardian.com, right? He said he's launched an unprecedented defense of gay rights in Africa. Feel me? Kenya's president that the state has no right to punish people because of who they love. Homosexual acts are illegal in Kenya, and surveys show 9 in 10 people find them unacceptable. When you start treating people differently because they're different, that's the path whereby freedom begin to erode and bad things happen. That's what Obama's quoted as saying, right? So I said to myself, freedom erodes when someone tries to dictate the scenario, force you to believe what you believe, demonize you for your belief, particularly when science, nature, and rational thought supports what you believe when freedom erodes. Obama compares anti-homosexuality law in Kenya to segregation and Jim Crow and slavery in the United States. Not hardly the same scenario, not hardly the same scenario as being forced into slavery, owned by another man, raped, murdered, tortured, lynched, disenfranchised, demonized, incarcerated, dehumanized for the benefit and perpetuation of white supremacy. That is no love story. It is a living nightmare. All right. Now, I thought Obama was supposed to be one of the smart presidents. Why would he say that? Obama continues to, I am painfully aware of the history of what happens when people are treated differently under the law. Kenyan president publicly disagreed with Obama. There are some things that we must admit we don't share. Kenyatta said, insisting that gay rights is not really an issue on the foremost mind of Kenyans. Africa has been described as the world's most homophobic continent, with same-sex relationships illegal in 36 of 54 countries and punishable by death in a handful. I'd say stay out of those countries. Here in the United States, there is fear, aversion, and discrimination against pedophiles, and there are laws that specifically pertain to them. Pedophiles love children. In the United States, it is wrong to engage in sexual behavior with a prepubic child or even a minor child, no matter how sexually mature. In many states, under age 18 and others under age 16. In Kenya, homosexuality is illegal. It is not an irrational idea, and people have a right to love or hate whatever they love or hate or tolerate anything they have an aversion to. And people will discriminate against homosexuality in defense of the mind and soul of their children, the truth and belief in the Creator. Any unacceptable behavior is a threat to the moral, ethical, mental, psychological growth and development of a child. It is the parent and adult's responsibility to guide the life of the child. There are many people in the United States that believe homosexuality is wrong, along with other behaviors, which they teach their children what behavior is right and wrong. I get why homosexuality is illegal in Kenya. Legal will not stop people from engaging in homosexual behavior. I don't get why anyone needs to look up anyone's anus. I'm assuming there are laws governing murder, assaults of all Kenyans, and that would or should include homosexuals. America is proof that laws don't stop people from assaulting and murdering one another for whatever reason they think or feel. Agree to disagree. Obey the laws of the land. And America, stay out of Kenya's business. You have a lot of business to deal with at home, if you must. I hear black folk are being forced into slavery in the Sudan. Why not take a trip over there? From www.maxwellsyr.edu. Slavery has been endemic in Sudan for thousands of years. Today, the Sudanese slave trade persists as a complex network of buyers, sellers, and middlemen that operates most actively when times are favorable to the practice. All right, so I'm running out of time. I can't even go to the Master P thing. Anyway, I just saw this statement real quick. He went to Michael Jackson's lawyer to ask about having more control of his work, and he said it cost him $25,000 just to have a sit down and talk with this guy, and all the guy said was, "You need to take control of distributing." He said that was the best $25,000 he ever spent. That's coming from a man that had $25,000 to spend. Me, I don't have it like that, so that's a lot of money. I would have rather done something else to get that money. Anyway, if I were an attorney, I would have told Master P that for free. But I'm not an attorney, and I got the information for free before I read that article. Anyway, thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank Retalk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, Blog Talk Radio, all callers and listeners. Remember, have a safe, enjoyous holiday, and each one, reach one, each one, teach one. Till next week, y'all. Later.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.